Ok, ce l'ho fatta, grande. Ok. Facciamo una cosa, chiudiamo sta roba, così, madonna, ce n'è sempre una. Vediamo se funziona questo, sì. Ok. So, have you found a seat somewhere, yeah? There are additional, come si dice scabelli? Seats over there, if you want. I know that this room is not comfortable, and we have only two lessons in this room. So. There is an additional place here if you want. Okay, probably you have to open the doors. This is another story. Security reasons. You are 40 person, and you have to open the doors. Okay. One and the other one there. Ho appena fatto il corso sulla sicurezza. Quindi vive il report. Giusto, no? Ok, quindi questa è aperta.
Non si sa mai.
Ok. So, dove ho lasciato il coso? Qua. We can probably start, okay? And what we do today? Okay, there was a question about the next week. Next week, actually, I had to put the lesson on Tuesday afternoon. I'm very sorry for people going to parasitology, but there is no way differently. So we will be in the Auletta 3. Orto Botanico in the afternoon from 2 to 4 p.m. Okay, the additional lesson. I will anyway write on the Moodle site today so you can have a resume. And the other thing is that we will have an additional lesson always on Tuesday morning, switching with the lesson of metabolic biochemistry. Okay, so you will have four lessons with Valentina Perisi, one on Monday, one on Wednesday, that is regular, okay, and then additional on Tuesday morning and Tuesday afternoon, okay?
Same
Tuesday, yeah. 27th, okay? Okay, so another announcement is that you have found, I opened the second research paper on the site, you probably can see it. And it's a paper on exactly on the subject that we discussed today, but the paper is there, and then you will discuss briefly with Valentina Peris in one of the sessions there. Okay, good. So the lesson today is epigenomes. We are in chapter 2, of course. Two lessons ago we made lesson 2.1 that was on genomes. Now this epigenomes, so it's a kind of progressing. And as you remember, this AP something means that it's something that is added to the sequence of DNA, so no change of the sequence DNA, but they are labels that are on the DNA itself as a methylation of the cytosines, or to the histones, as you remember, that they carry several marks, several modifications that we collectively call PTMs, that means post-translational modification. So what we see today is just to go through this kind of modification, and actually today is quite a methodological lesson in the sense that we go through several methods to study this kind of modification genome-wide, okay? So that's the story. And probably the best way to go through this subject is to look for the this epigenomics, that means these four titles here, and actually this makes part of this functional genomics studies that I told you that started more or less in at the end of the Human Genome Project, so in 2003, in which several consortiums, or consortia if you say it in Latin, started making different big projects to interrogate this kind of objects in a number of cell types, a number of samples. And this is one of these projects, probably the most important, at least for the Western world. There was another very important problem that is called which is called Phantom, that was carried out based on the Riken Institute in Japan. But anyway, we more or less the same. So we look for this project. And this is just the first page of the site. Okay, so if you click on this link here, you go to the, I hope that the connection works, maybe. Oh yeah, it works. Okay, good. So this is the page, the web page of the project, and there are many, many things that you can do here. There is a little story about the project, of course, explanation of what they did. And as you can see here, they studied human, mouse, worm, and fly. So they studied four organisms, okay, taking a number of projects. So just to impress you, I show you how many projects of sequencing, not DNA sequencing, sequencing of all this kind of modification that I mentioned, okay, in all this is the number. So we have something like 14,063 projects going on in this site that are called with different acronyms or names, okay? And we have something like 14,063 biosamples types, so cell lines, tissue, whole organisms, primary cells, in vitro differentiated cells, stem cells, cell-free samples, and induced pluripotent stem cell lines, so a lot of them. So if you go on the screen, you see the numbers, okay, for each of the projects that you see, okay, and if you click over there, you can go to the site with the explanation of what they did, okay. So just to show you what they did, I don't know if you can see, if you are too far away, maybe it's difficult to see, but anyway, I explain you. This is the kind of assay that they did, okay. For example, ChIP-seq, something that you know, okay. Then there are many other, like DNA-seq, that we explain in a few minutes, okay? Or ATAC-seq, you will see, and so on. So this is the kind of experiment that they run, and this is the kind of cell or sample that they analyzed, okay? So, for example, this is cell line, and these are human cell lines, okay, that are of different origin, tissue origin, of course, hepatocyte, mammary gland, or whatever else, okay? And this is the number of single experiments of chip sequencing that they run. So something like 669 experiments only on those cells interrogating 669 transcription factors. So you can understand how large was the project, how deep and how large. So this is a hepatocyte, 356 experiments, and so on, so on, and so on. So only for ChIP-seq, and then you have other experiments, okay? Then you go down, you found, this is cell lines, so established cell lines, you know, immortalized, okay? Then you go to tissue. This tissue means that they are actually biopsies for either living organisms or dead organisms, depending on the kind type. Of course, you cannot take a biopsy from a human, usually. And so they usually are the person that donated the organs to research, okay? Or primary cells, so cells that are taken from a tissue and put in culture for a few weeks, as you know, and then you can make experiments of there, or in vitro differentiated cells, that means that you have stem cells or induced pluripotent stem cells, you know, you can treat with some factors induce them to differentiate in vitro. And so again, there are many of this kind, and again, stem cells and induced pluripotent stem cell lines, and so on, so on, so on. And the see more. So it means that the list of the examples is not finished there. So you can just to impress you. So how large, how important was the project? So we have all this kind of data. Now in the database, and okay, we will go through the database in the future. But now just to take a look at this story. Okay, so please, if you have a little time, go to the ENCODE site, to the first page, and you find all the explanation about all this assay that they run. Okay, you see here ChIP-seq, DNAs. We explain in a minute what they are, and so on. So they did actually interrogated everything in the genome. So they interrogated the accessibility of chromatin, the methylation of chromatin, methylation to histones, okay, transcription, but this is the next chapter, and so on. So a lot of things. Okay. Let me close this. Come si fa a chiudere sta roba? Ah, qui forse, speriamo. Sì, ok. So, anyway, sorry, this was just the enlargement of the story. Okay. So, the first thing is, of course, the accessibility. Okay, so when you look for epigenomes, means that, of course, you have to get information, but a starting point for epigenomes is to look for parts of the chromatin which are accessible. We already mentioned that, and parts of the chromatin that are not. Okay, and so in a very rough way, we can just make a DNAs, as you saw in the previous lessons. But actually, there are methods that can be much more refined. And actually, the three methods that the people use to make epigenomes are DNA-seq, FAIR-seq, and ATAC-seq. And the DNA-seq is self-explaining, of course, while this FAIR and ATAC, this is the spelling. So the first is formaldehyde-assisted isolation of regulatory elements, and the third is assay for transposase-accessible chromatin. All these methods are coupled to NGS, of course, but even though there have been some experiments that used microarrays. Do you know more or less what microarrays are? Yeah. So they used, for making this kind of study, they didn't use expression arrays. So the probes are not directed against the coding sequence, but they are usually what people call tiling arrays. Tiling arrays is a special version of array in which you have probes that cover all the genome, okay, independently of the place. Okay, so you have regulatory sequences or intergenic sequences whatsoever. So the problem is that to make probe to cover all the genome, you require a real huge number of probes, and for example, the Affymetrix company sold in between the 2005 and 2010, they sold a version of the human complete tiling arrays that was actually a set of 11 glasses, 11 slides, because there was a huge number of probes. Anyway, this is not used anymore. It's used only for special applications. So we go through the NGS that is more comprehensible, and so on. Okay. So you have a help somewhere in the last section. You have a background help if you want about DNA microarrays. Okay. In the last section of Moodle. Okay. So let's go to the first. This is DNA-seq that is actually the genomic version of DNA sensitivity assay that you learned last week. And so the story is that if you remember, DNA is quite a large enzyme, so it cuts only usually only one time in the middle of a linker. And especially in the place in which there is more space, okay? So if you use low concentration of DNAs, you will attack only part of DNA that are very, really very accessible, okay? So what you do is usually to make, this is explained better, okay? So you have a chromatin here, you have nucleosomes and so on and so. So here there is a something like, for example, an enhancer or a promoter. So you have a situation in which the nucleosomes are not tightly bound to the chromatin, as you remember. And there are probably transcription factors or other stories. And this is a typical situation in which DNAs can actually attack the DNA and digest. Okay. So you take the chromatin. Chromatin is extracted, and then you put DNAs on it for a certain amount of time and for a certain concentration. And so the DNAs will cut, okay, will cut the position in which there are this kind of nucleosome-free regions, okay? So what actually is done is that DNAs digest all these points in which the DNAs can attack, and so what you obtain is that you have DNA that is not digested on the two sides, okay? This one is fragmented, so you cannot purify it anymore. So you can purify only the left and right parts that is left after DNAs. At this point, you blunt it, okay? Blunt it means that you make a, you know what it means, blunt, okay? Because usually the DNAs is not precise, so it digests the two filaments randomly. So you use another enzyme to make blunts, and then you ligate linkers. You see, linker and linker here. And this linker is actually biotinylated, so it carries a modification on the one of the bases. It's a biotin, okay? So when you have made the ligation, you make MME digestion. MME is a restriction enzyme that cuts very frequently because it has a 4 bases recognition site, so it cuts very frequently in the DNA, okay? So you cut with MME restriction enzyme, and so you obtain small pieces of left and right DNA from the DNA's hypersensitive site. Okay, so at this point you use a streptavidin conjugated bead. This is a bead, solid bead like agarose or sapphirose or whatever. The same that you use in immunoprecipitation. Nothing strange, but it's coupled with streptavidin, so it will recognize the biotin that is here in the linker. So you purify this fragment down. Okay. At this point, you make another ligation that is on the other side. So this is the second adapter. Okay, this blue one is the second adapter. Now you have the perfect situation to make libraries. Okay, so you take a primer on this adapter, a primer on the other one. You amplify by PCR, and this is the library for making NGS. Okay, so you sequence all the story. So in practice, what you get is the sequence of the small fragments flanking the DNA's hypersensitive site. Okay, to make the story short. Okay. So this is the DNA's seq assay, and the other version that I mentioned is FairSeq. This is another story that is completely different, because it relies on the fact that when you make a phenyl chloroform extraction, you remember more or less phenyl chloroform? Have you heard about phenyl chloroform extraction of DNA?
I know.
No, you never. Okay, so you take a cell, short, and make a lyse, so you have everything in it. You have RNA, DNA, proteins, blah, blah. Then you put phenyl, okay, on it. Phenol will precipitate the proteins. So all the proteins will not be soluble anymore. They precipitate out, okay? And then you have that the DNA is not soluble in phenol, okay? So it will stay on the aqueous phase. Phenol is organic, so it won't mix to the, okay? So when you mix it and then centrifuge, you will find three layers. The first upper is water, let's say buffer, whatever, and then you have DNA and RNA in it. Okay, the second one is precipitate. At the interface, you have the protein precipitate. And then in the phenol phase, you will have all the small molecules, organic molecules, bases, or whatever. Okay? So at this point, you just take the surnatant and you get pure DNA, something. Okay? You have to add chloroform just to separate well the phenol and water, but it's just kind of story. So when you have a mix, so you have a chromatin is made of DNA and protein, of course, histones and all the story. So if you make a phenol chloroform extraction of DNA, you will have that the DNA which is free of histones, okay, will go to the surnatant, okay. Why? The DNA, which is bound to protein, since the protein will precipitate and will anyway go down, okay, they will separate from the aqueous phase. So if you make this treatment of chromatin, of course you have to fragment chromatin first. This is, of course, I never mentioned, but the chromatin is a huge molecule you can never treat as a wall. So you fragment and so on and so. And then the first phase is as exactly what you do with a chip. It's the same story. Cross-linking, fragmenting, and so on. Then you go there and you have the DNA on the surnatant will be the DNA which is more accessible in the chromatin. Okay, so the one was protein-free in the chromatin. So you just take this DNA, make libraries, and go to NGS. And so you will sequence all the DNA which was in the free region of the DNA, okay? And then we have a third method that is quite interesting because now is probably one of the most used methods in the last years, that is called ATAC-seq, and is based on transposase. Transposase, you know what they are, right? Transposases are prokaryotic enzymes which are able to take one DNA piece and insert in any other DNA piece. Okay. Never heard about transposases? Yeah. No, never? Really?
No.
Ah, okay. So, what the biotech, there was a biotech company that developed this system in which you have a transposase. Okay, actually it's a transposome because there are many proteins together, but anyway, let's say a transposase. Okay, that is already bound, not to a continuous piece of DNA, but with two pieces, small pieces of DNA, that are actually the sequencing linker. You remember how to make libraries for NGS? You have to add linkers to left and right parts, okay? So what you have is that this transposase is already pre-loaded with sequencing primers. Okay, so the red and the blue one. So if you take chromatin, and this time you don't take chromatin fixed, you take just chromatin, and then you add this kind of reagent, TN5 transposome, loaded with the linker, it will make its job. Its job is to insert DNA in another DNA, but it will do only in places in which it is accessible, okay? So for the DNA that is around the nucleosome, for example, you cannot reach, so it will not insert any DNA there, but it will when the DNA is free. So what you get is that you will find a piece of DNA that was added of the linker inside, okay, because the transposase will add the linker in this region. So we have a piece of DNA here that is flanked by the inserted sequences on the right and on the left. Okay? Fantastic. So at this point you take this DNA, you fragment with sonication as usual, And then you make PCR, and the PCR will amplify only those regions in which the transposase has inserted the linkers. Okay? And it works. That what is fantastic is that it works finally. And so you will produce a library of all the accessible sequences. Okay? And then sequence. Good. So these are the three methods. And with the three methods, you obtain formally, when you use NGS, you obtain, as you know, millions and millions of reads, okay, depending on the kind of machine that you use, that can be longer or shorter, or whatever. But anyway, the important story is that when you map these reads on the reference genome, okay, so when you make alignment, you study these kind of things in bioinformatics, right? You are studying this? No. You are studying how to map the reads to the genomes?
I guess.
Not really.
They are the following.
Okay, you will see. Okay. Anyway, you will see how to do it. It's not difficult. Anyway, imagine you have the reference genome, that is the human genome sequence. Is the database. And then make blasts. You know what is blast. So for it, each read you make blast, and so you find exactly the place in which it is. Okay. So you have when you make genomic DNA sequencing like two lessons ago. Okay. You have, if you remember, a kind of random distribution all over. When you make DNA seq or ATAC seq or whatever else. Of course it's not, because you have only those regions in which that were nucleosome free. Okay? So only those regions of genome in which there was accessibility. Okay? So is this the only reads that you get is this one. So you will have a kind of peak of reads in determinate regions. Okay? Good. Okay, so how to count this kind of situation? What you do is just to count each nucleotide, how many reads are on that nucleotide. I tried to make a histogram for explaining you. Imagine that these are the reads that you get, okay? An example, it's a very short example. These are very short reads for reasons that you can understand. And this is the reference sequence of the genome, okay? So as you can see, I aligned all the reads to the sequence, okay? Can you follow me? This is aligned to this sequence. For example, this is aligned to this sequence. It's the same, okay? Good. At this point, you just count for each nucleotide the number of reads that are aligned, okay? So here you have 0, 0, 0, 0, 0. Here you have 1, okay? 1, 1, 1. This is 2, 2 times represented, okay? And so you make a histogram. Can you follow? This is a histogram of the reads that you find in that piece of the DNA, okay? So at this point, you have a histogram like this one. And as you can imagine, this is enormously demanding from the computing point of view. Enormously, because this is a 3 billion position. So it makes a lot of data. And usually we don't do that. We divide in bins. So we don't calculate each nucleotide, but we group the nucleotides in groups of 2, groups of 5, 10, depending on the computing power that we have, okay? So this is called a bin, and means that this theoretical graph becomes something like this one, okay? Virtually nobody will make a nucleotide by nucleotide map, because it's too demanding. I mean, so usually we divide in our laboratory, we divide in bins of 50, because we don't have supercomputer to spend for that anyway. So the resolution is less, but anyway, it's good. So this is the kind of map that you obtain, okay? This is an example Don't be worried if you don't understand exactly what it means, but this is the appearance that you will find several times in this course and also in your life, maybe. That is the common representation that we have of this data on the chromosome. So, try to explain slow this line so you can get... And also don't be worried because you will... do a hands-on exercise on this, okay? On a practical session, okay? So we see how to work and so on. Anyway, just to explain, okay, this is a region, a small piece of this chromosome. Example, this is chromosome 19, okay? And the small region that is zoomed is this one in red, okay? So this is zoomed out, and you see a small piece of it. This is the map. So from here to here you have 50 kilobases. And these are the coordinates on the chromosome. So this means that this is nucleotide 36,150,000. Okay, this is nucleotide 36,200,000, so and so. Okay, so these are the coordinates on the chromosome. Okay, good? Understood? Good. So the x-axis is the position on the chromosome. Okay. On the y-axis, you have exactly that histogram that you saw before in the other slide. Okay. Exactly this kind of histogram. Same story, but of course it's a little less resolved because we have so many base pairs in this figure. Okay. We have something like 100 base pair or something, 100,000, okay? So, in this accession, you have, as you can see, this is a comparison that was published a few years ago, a comparison of Vataksik experiment with DNA's seq, and this was run by the ENCODE consortium, and this is the FAIR seq run by ENCODE consortium, on the same cells, of course. Okay? And this is an ATAC-seq that was made only on 500 cells, just to demonstrate that it's a very powerful method for analyzing this kind of story. And here you have a relative frequency of covering of each nucleotide. Okay? So you have a region here with a peak of accessibility. Here another peak of accessibility, here another peak, and so on, so on, so on, so on. Okay, so this is a map of all the position in this region, small region of this chromosome, in which you have points with accessibility. Okay? Now, as you can see, the three methods work more or less comparably, because all the three methods have a peak here, two peaks here and so on, so they are quite similar as a result, okay? That confirms that you can use either one or the other of those three methods more or less independently from each other, okay? And also that you can use ATAC-seq with very few cells that more or less work, not really completely, but anyway, the higher peaks here are picked up also by this modification. Look that this is 100 less cells than in the other experiments. Okay, so it's a teeny amount of material. Okay, now the last thing. What is here down? So this is you have to get accustomed to this kind of representation. In this piece of the chromosome that is represented here, you have several genes. Okay, and so this is the map of the genes that are known genes, of course, that are mapped in this region. Okay, so each of them, can you see from the far away? Can you see here? Each of those representations is one gene. We usually represent the exon with a thick mark, and the introns with a line. Okay, so this is exon, intron structure there. And this thick mark here is the UTR, that usually is longer than the other exons. Okay, So this is one gene that is called house 5. Don't ask me what it is, I don't know. You have to go to the database to discover. This is another gene, as you can see here, RBM42 is called. This is another gene, ATV2, and blah, 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 blah. Okay, so they are the genes, okay? So you have not only the map of your experiment, but you also have the map of where the genes are, okay? Okay. Now, just try. Then we will come back to this kind of figures many times, so don't be worried. But just try to see whether you see a very important signal of this accessibility that could be interpreted as a promoter, for example. Can you see one of those that you can interpret as a promoter?
Maybe
near ZBTB32. Yeah, for example, here a big signal here on the left. Also, you have probably an answer somewhere here. Okay, okay. So just try to make a figure of that. Good. So we can move to the next. Okay. No. What is the last histogram here? As you can probably perceive, not see, but perceive, there are different colors here. These are four graphs for four different modifications that are made by ChIP-seq. Okay, so they run also ChIP-seq for this modification. This is the methylation of the lysine 4 of histone 3. This is acetylation of histone 3 lysine 27. This is monomethylation of K4. And this is the famous CTCF, you remember, this is a protein that binds the border of domains in chromatin. Okay? So these are ChIP-seq, and the results are mapped exactly in the same way, but the color code. So the green line is CTCF. For example, you have a binding site here. Okay? The violet one is here, is May1, and it's not really visible, but it just you put in the same figure, you put also the ChIP sequencing results. And you can continue. I mean, you have all the results, you can put all the tracks, we call them tracks, on the experiments. Okay, so we move on. And of course, the histone PTMs that you have seen here are studied by ChIP-seq. We have discussed already ChIP-seq, so you remember, antibody against one modification of histones will precipitate only the chromatin containing that modification, and then you amplify and make a library and NGS and so on. You have seen this already, so I just skip. Okay, one additional question on ChIP is that when you make this kind of experiment for PTMs, for histone modification, of course, if you remember, a couple of lessons ago, we discussed the fact that there is a histone code. You remember that? So we see that many times you have many different modifications to the histone tails that go together, okay? So you find together in the same place different modifications. But the question is, of course, that we have a... This is a model, okay? But try to forget the model and think about the real life, okay? What we do for making a ChIP-seq experiment or a ChIP immunoprecipitation for a single locus the same, we take many cells. Okay, you have seen before, 50,000 cells, anyway, many cells, okay? So you have many copies of the DNA inside, okay? Of the chromatin, you have many copies. If you extract 50,000 cells, you have 100,000 alleles, okay? So we will have 100,000 copies of the same story. So, the question is, maybe that you see on a particular locus, you see two modifications, something like, I don't know, a methylation of K4 and acetylation of K27. But the problem is, I see them, but are they in the same allele? Because maybe that half of the cell have one modification, half of the cells have the other modification, but I see them together, of course. Okay? So the question is, how can I study the contemporaneous modification on the same nucleus, on the same story? And this is made with a modification of chip that is called a re-chip. Very easy conceptually, because you take your chromatin, okay, and then you cross-link with formaldehyde, fragment with sonication and so on. And then if you have a couple of modifications that are together on the same histones, okay, you would be able to first immunoprecipitate with an antibody against the first modification. So immunoprecipitate the chromatin with the first modification, okay. Then elute, okay, elute means to detach your immunoprecipitate from the bits, and re-immunoprecipitate with the second antibody against the second modification. Okay? So if they are on the same instance, you will pick up. Okay? So this is called re-chip. It's quite difficult because every time you lose a little bit of the materials, but many people did this kind of re-chip. For actually, yeah.
Generally, how many modifications could I
answer instead? No, I mean, in the reality, you have many modifications, something like 10, maybe 12 modifications, the same nucleosome. The problem is that technically, every time you make elution and then re-immunoprecipitation, you lose 50% of the material. So if you make re-chip, you lose everything.
And more or less.
People usually make only re-chip one time. And then you can ask for another modification, making a different experiment. So.
In this case, re-chip is used solely when they want to clarify if
a modification is contemporary on the same. Yeah. But it's quite a difficult story, and people don't use, for example, it with SIC because it's very difficult. So you just make on one locus to interrogate one locus at the time. But you can discuss with Professor Perissi if you are curious, because she did this kind of stories. I did not. So I don't know the exact trick and tips for this kind of story. Okay. So just as an example, I wanted to show you one paper. Is actually just to show how the real results came from this kind of experiment. This is probably one of the first published papers reporting post-translational modification to histones genome-wide using this Illumina technology. Actually, this was the Illumina first version. It made only very short reads, something like 30 to 35 nucleotides longer. So it was the first. Anyway, it's okay. This is the paper. It was published on Cell something like 11 years ago. So they used a different 20 histone lysine and arginine methylations. So they interrogated this kind of PTMs, as well as histone variant. You remember variants of histones. This is the H2AZ, and then also the position of RNA polymerase 2, and the insulator binding protein CTCF. Okay. So, okay. The technology was exactly the same that I repeated several times. So, chromatin immunoprecipitation followed by library construction, sequencing, mapping, and all this story. Okay, this is, I can skip because it was the technical story of making clustering on Illumina chips and then sequencing. No problem. So, going to the results. And again, the results are illustrated in this kind of figures that you are familiar with. And we call them genome browsers. Okay, so And as you can see, again, this is chromosome 19 again. This is the position, again, from 54,700,000 to 55 million, so it makes something like 300,000 space in the chromosome. Okay. Correct? 300,000 and something. Correct? Do I have to make a test on Socrates? No, please. I mean, this is 55 million, this is 54,700, so it makes more or less 300,000. Okay? And here is the result of this ChIP-seq against the H3 histone, lysine 4, trimethylation. Okay? Trimethyl lysine. Which maybe you remember, maybe you don't. I don't know, don't remember. This is typical of the promoter regions. Usually you find this kind of modification close to the nucleosomes that stay on the promoters. But you will study that with Valentina Perissi thoroughly next week. Anyway. And this is a modification because they compare the classical ChIP-seq with another technology that I don't explain you. Was something like a older version of the ChIP-seq, and forget. Okay, more or less they compared them and saw more or less the same results. Okay, so here you have genes again. As you can see, this is a very dense region of the genome because there are so many genes inside. Okay, you see there. Okay, and as you can see, there are many, many places in which you have H3K4 methylation. This is logical because you have many genes, so you have many promoters, so you will have many peaks of this kind of modification. If I take a region of the chromosome in which you have a desert, no genes, you will never find this modification. It will be completely heterochromatic, so flat. Okay? Can you follow? Good. Okay, so this is the first kind of representation of ChIP-seq results. I mean, histograms over the map of a genome. Of a piece of the genome, of course, because you don't have space to make everything. Okay. And the second one is to try to coordinate all the signals. Okay. So we said that this modification, trimethylation of histone 3, lysine 4 is typical of promoters. Okay? Good? So, what we can take is to align all the promoters. Okay? So, the bioinformatician took all the known genes, okay, from the sequence of the genome, okay? And they aligned them to the first nucleotide which is transcribed for each gene. Okay? Can you follow? We call it TSS, transcriptional start site. So imagine we have different genes, and independently of the sequence that they have, of course the sequence is different from gene to gene, okay, they align them putting the plus one, so the first nucleotide transcribed, the TSS. Okay? And then you look for a window. Of course you don't look for all the genome, look for a window that is before the transcription starts inside, and the window that is after the transcription starts inside. Okay? So you take a window of a sequence, and then at this point you map, you calculate the frequency of each of the signals that you saw on the genome, okay, for the specific modification you are asking for. Okay, so you map the frequency, you count for each position, you count the frequency of the ChIP-seq result that you had before. And you get this kind of image. Okay? Look at this one, the left one, that is easier to understand, and we look for the other one that are more difficult. This is a ChIP sequencing made with an antibody against POL2. What is POL2? Everybody knows, RNA polymerase. Okay? So if a gene is transcribed, is active, okay, you will find the RNA polymerase on the promoter. Okay, because as you probably remember, it takes a lot of time before the polymerase lands on the promoter, then it takes a lot of time before the polymerase starts and go to the gene body. So the main signal that you see is on the promoter. Okay? Good. So look at this. Now, what they did was to put all the 20,000 genes that we know in the human genome aligned by the TSS. Okay? And then they have a window, 5,000 and 5,000 on the other side, and they calculate the frequency of the signal for pol 2. Okay? From all the genes. And what you see is that you have a peak. Don't look at the colors for the moment. Just look in the wall and you see there is a peak on zero that is normal. Okay, this is expected. Okay. Most of the gene, they have a very high signal close to the TSS is normal. Now they divided the 20,000 genes of our genome in groups, depending on the level of expression they have. So in parallel, on the same cells, they run microRNA experiment to understand which is the level of transcription of gene. Okay? And they divided in four groups. Genes in red that are highly expressed, so they have a high level of transcription. Green is medium, so intermediate level of transcription. Blue is low. They are transcribed, but quite silent, okay, slowly, and the black one is silent, so no transcription at all, okay, silent genes, okay. And look now at the traces. You see that the red one that is highly expressed has a very high signal of pol 2, okay. This is intermediate, the green one. This is low, and this is absent, okay. Good. Expect again. We expect to find a signal of polymerase that is very high on the highly transcribed genes. It's normal. Okay? Also, note that in very highly transcribed genes, you also see the polymerase in the gene body. Can you see it? Where is the gene body, in your opinion? Is it on the left or on the right? On the right, because we are usually, this is, I mean, you can make the plot on the other way around, but since we write from left to right, of course, this is our way to go. I'm just saying that because we are making the international course on medicine in San Luigi since this year, and we have a lot of students coming from unusual countries like Chinese or Japanese or Indian guys that are following the course, and I realized that for them it's not that evident going from the left to the right. Many times this is a kind of psychological thing. If you make also a slide with a scheme or something, you put something that is before in our hand is on the left, and you make arrows and you go to the right. Ever. And for them it's the other way around, so they expect the first thing to be on the high. Anyway, it's just joking. So this is before for us, okay, and this is after transcription starts side. So this is the signal in the gene body, and as you can see, you see a signal that is higher than in the preceding section. It's not enormously higher, because of course the polymerase, once the polymerase is started, it goes quite quickly, so you cannot find so many molecules of the polymerase in that region, but some of them are there, okay? Good. So, this is polymerase 2, and this is another story, because this is a modification to histones, okay? So, this is the modification, K4-2-methyl. Okay, 2-methyl is also found at the promoters, not as high as the 3-methyl modification, but it's also found around the promoters. And as you can see here, you have signals, quite clear before and after this transcriptional site. Please note also that the window is not as large as this one. This was 500,000, this is 2,000, so it's narrower. Okay. And you see here that you have modification, and you see the modification that is high, a little higher in highly transcribed genes, a little lower in medium, low and silent genes. Okay. But there is a kind of opposite story in the middle, because here you have a peak in the middle, here you don't. This is low. Why? We have low modification of histon 3K4 in the middle, just in the site where the promoter is, where the polymerase is. This is a question for you.
Can you repeat, please?
Yeah, the question is that here you see that at 0.0 you have a very high peak of polymerase, okay? Looking at the modification of histones, this is a methylation of lysine, blah, blah, blah. You see high level here, that is before, and high level here, that is after, just after. But you see a zero, or almost zero, exactly on the promoter. This is the region of the promoter, okay? TSS. So why we have a kind of zero level of modification of the promoters?
Because that's the
polymerase.
Yeah. Fuochetta.
Because there are no
cells
on the promoter.
Yeah, there is no nucleosome on the promoter. Promoter is, if you have active promoters, of course, this is free of nucleosomes. You have polymerase, transcription factors, and so on. So, okay. So if you don't have nucleosome, you don't have histones. So you have a valley, okay, inside. Okay, this is typical. And whenever you look for any kind of histone modification, you find just before, just after, and then a valley in between. Okay. Please note also that this modification is downstream. We say downstream, so on the right side, you see it's higher. Okay, it's higher than on the left. Means that actually the modification of histones is higher in the gene body than in the previous section. This is also normal because, as you remember, the gene body has to be modified to allow polymerase to go through. Okay. Good. So, same story. You can go to see, okay, the POL2 and H3K4Me3 was the same that you saw before. See all the traces? This is Me2, this is Me3. 3 methylation is clearer than Me2, you see. Peak, and then region free here. This is monomethylation. This is the methylation of K27. This is the monomethylation of K27. This is 36, 79, K9. And other modification. This is H2AZ. Okay. So just consider these two modifications and tell me your opinion. This is H3K4 Me1, so monomethylation, dimethylation, trimethylation. We saw that this kind of methylation is linked to active regions. Okay, active regions. In this case, promoter. Now look at the H3K27Me3. What do you find different from the other traces? Yeah, we have something like a little peak on the TSS. Okay, it's smaller. I mean, it's very variable because you have a kind of oscillation very very, very high. Okay. And then you have a small peak over there. It's less visible than this peak, of course. But anyway, you have. But what is the other difference?
Maybe signal. So normalized counts in the data is bigger for low expression genes, not for high expression.
So look at the colors. This is the black one. This is the blue one. Green. And red, that is exactly the other way around as compared to the others. Okay, So in the other graphs, you see the red and green very high. Okay, and then the blue and black are very low. Okay, because this is active modification. On the contrary, K27M3 is a heterochromatic mark. Okay, so it's a mark of inactive points, and as you can see, it's very clear. Okay. Whenever you have active gene, you have low K27M3. Whenever you have inactive genes, you have high 27M3. Okay. So this illustrates very well how this kind of modification work in the cell. Okay. Then I don't look through everything because it's too long, but just another modification that I want to note with you is this K36. K36 has another pattern, please comment. What is the difference in between the pattern that you see on K36 and the other ones? Yeah. Exactly. So you see that the higher modification is inside the gene body, so on the right part of the graph. It's very low on the other side. And again, it is proportional to the expression. Red, green, blue, black. So this K36, take in your mind, is a modification that actually is limited to the gene body. And it tells us if a gene is transcribed or not. It's proportional to the level of transcription in the gene body. Okay? And we will see in the last part of the course that is also linked to splicing. So whenever you have this kind of modification, you have also activity of splicing. These are also modifications that are typical of the gene body, as you can see, this K20 monomethylated of H4. And the final thing is this H2AZ, just to note. This is a histone isoform. As you remember, probably I told you that some of these histone isoforms are placed in active nucleosomes. And this is exactly what you see here. So again, we have the same kind of pattern. This is TSS. And again, you have a very high signal of H2AZ before and after the transcription site, meaning that in the nucleosomes that are just flanking an active promoter, there was a substitution of the isoform. So they don't carry the normal H2A isoform, but this one.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I don't understand the explanation about the modification in H3K36. So there are more
this one?
Yeah, on the gene body. So
yeah.
What's the result? The gene is...
Okay, there is also a link that has been demonstrated, because when the RNA polymerase, as you remember, when it goes through, is phosphorylated. And on serine, on the CTD, on the carboxy terminal domain, you have modification on serine 2 and serine 5. And serine 2 actually binds to the... binds to the enzyme which writes this modification that is called set2D. And so actually the reason is that whenever the RNA polymerase starts and transcribes, it will modify the nucleosomes in front of her. Probably the meaning is to facilitate transcription in some sense. Okay, good. So the first part of the lesson is over. And I ask you to resist because I have to run. I have another appointment at 11:30, so I have to run. So I go ahead and try to finish in time. Okay. So the last problem is CpG methylation. We haven't talked that much on CpG methylation, but... CpG methylation is the first epigenetic marks that has been discovered. So people at the beginning of 70s. So many years ago, 50 years ago, they already knew that some of the cytosine were methylated in humans and mammals in general. Okay, and cytosine methylation is a typical heterochromatic mark. Okay, so you find a very high frequency of methylation of cytosine in silenced genes or silenced regions. Okay. For example, you know that in females you have two X chromosomes, and that's probably, you remember, one of these X chromosomes is completely out of combat. You remember what is the body? You see in the nucleus. How is it called? Anybody of you remembers? Okay. That is the X, one of the X chromosomes is completely heterochromatic and is kept out of the play. Okay, so, and this is completely hypermethylated. If you look at this gene, I mean the gene, the sequence is completely hypermethylated. And also, for example, the genes that are constitutively expressed, that we call also housekeeping genes, they have islands of CG regions in the promoters. Probably know that. One of the kind of promoters in human is CG-rich. And they have unmethylated CpG islands. So it means that methylation is actually related to the activity. Okay, and cytosine methylation is common in mammals and plants, but it's not used in the same way in cerevis and elegans. So it appears to be a modification in vertebrates. Okay. Anyway, this is methylation. Okay, we have three. We know three enzymes that carry on the methylation. Okay, it is this one. The donor is S-adenosyl methionine. Okay, and you can have demethylation. Of course, you can have the reverse reaction that is carried by oxidative pathway. There are a number of enzymes that are called TET enzymes that actually oxidate this guy until the CO2, so they eliminate as a CO2. Okay. This is one mechanism. The other mechanism is dilution. Of course, in a cell you have many methylation, then when you replicate the DNA, you don't have the same methylation, so you dilute. Okay. You can dilute. Okay. So this. What does the methylation do in terms of molecular function? Well, usually it is, as I told you, it is associated with repressed genes, so with silenced parts of the genome. And there is a link. In some cases, the methylation avoids transcription factor binding to the DNA. In other words, there are a number of transcription factors that are methylation sensitive. So when they look at the DNA and found methylation on cytosine, they cannot bind anymore. Okay, but they are not that many, but they exist. For example, one of those is the famous CTCF that we saw before. CTCF is methylation sensitive. So this, anyway, this is a one of the mechanisms. So TF interference. So you have methylation, you cannot bind transcription factor, you cannot transcribe, you cannot activate the region. Okay. And the second mechanism that is probably more important is that many proteins exist in vertebrates, in mammals, which bind specifically this methylation on cytosine. They are called methyl cytosine binding proteins, MBP. Okay? So they are specific proteins for that. And these MBPs have been found to co-immunoprecipitate with a number of enzymes that are called co-repressor or writers or whatever else, that actually are competent for writing silencing modification to histones. Okay, for example, the H3K27 MITRI that we saw before. Okay, so whenever you have methylation in the DNA, you will associate MBP. MBP is associated to writers, and they will modify the histones consequently. Okay, so we will find silent modification to histones. in the same place. Okay? And this is quite common in the sense that I've been demonstrated many, many times for that this kind of mechanism. In human there are many proteins like this one, MBD1, MBD2, 3, 4, and then there is a fifth additional member that actually was the first discovered that is called differently, as many times happens, because the first author called it me CPT, CP2, sorry, and then the other members were called differently. All of them have a methyl binding domain, of course, and some of them also possess a transcriptional repressor domain. Some, not all of them, okay. And anyway, this is one of those, the MBT4, also possesses a glycosylase that is probably associated to a DNA repair. You remember the base excision repair mechanism that goes through a glycosylase enzyme. So maybe that is associated. Anyway, it's not. I don't want to make a systematic analysis of these proteins, but just to remember that this is an important piece of the mechanism, probably, that associates hypermethylation of CpG with repressive histone modification. Okay? Good. So, methylation is done by these enzymes, okay? This one is the so-called maintenance enzyme, because it will replicate the methylation during mitosis. We will see that tomorrow. And the MT3A and 3B are de novo methyl transferases that are very important in the early phase of development. We will see tomorrow. Okay, so that's a story. So the important fact is that methyl cytosine is only deposited when you have cytosine followed by guanine. This is very important to remember. So what we call CpG means this dinucleotide here, cytosine, phosphate, guanine. Okay. So the modification, we will place it here. Good. The methylation, as I told you, is either for dilution or for this kind of progressive hydroxylation. So you see here, this is methylation, methyl cytosine, and then you go to hydroxymethyl cytosine. Then you have oxidation again, formyl methionine, formyl cytosine, sorry, and then you go to acid group. This is a carboxylic group, okay, and then the following oxidation makes a decarboxylation, as you know from biochemistry. Okay, so making these four steps that are catalyzed by these TET enzymes, you can have a reverse situation, and you can have. You can find in the genome, if you use, for example, an antibody against hydroxymethyl cytosine, this one, you can find some level of hydroxymethyl cytosine. So this reaction is probably quite slow. Okay, the reaction of successive oxidation is quite slow. So you can find a little amount of hydroxymethyl cytosine. And some authors also try to give a functional interpretation of this hydroxymethyl cytosine. But since I don't know anything about the subject, I don't talk anymore. So maybe, but I don't know. Good. Oh, sorry, it was the enlarged picture of the same story. Okay. So there is also a story about this conversion of cytosine to thymine in the evolution, but we don't have time to talk about, maybe in the following lecture. So now, what we have to do now in the remaining half an hour is to understand how to measure CpG methylation. And of course, as ever, we have a single locus analysis or a genome-wide analysis, as usual. So the first kind of analysis we can do is to use methylation-sensitive restriction enzyme. There are some of the restriction enzymes that are sensitive to methylation. Okay, So some of them only cuts methylated DNA, some of them only cuts unmethylated DNA. So we can use either of them to analyze this story. And these are the most used enzymes that you see. Okay. So when you have a star, means that this will digest also methylated sequence, and this will not. Okay. So you can use the couple of enzymes to recognize one of the other one. Okay. Same story for SMAY1, XMAY1. Then some authors also used this MCRBC that recognized two methylated C, but cutting 50 to 1,000 base apart. So it's kind of imprecise enzyme and it's only rarely used. So this is the first accession. And just to show you how it works, it's quite easy. This is one of the common this is called a combined bisulfite restriction analysis. What bisulfite does on methyl cytosine? This is a very important reagent, because when you take a DNA and treat the DNA with bisulfite, sodium bisulfite, it will convert to U, the unmethylated cytosine, while the methyl cytosine will not be modified. Okay, so you can distinguish the two using this kind of story. Okay. And then you modify with bisulfite, and then you will either make an enzymatic analysis with one of these enzymes here, or clone the alleles and sequence them as you want. Okay, so first accession is this restriction analysis, and it's very easy. So you have that C will be converted to U, okay, when you make when you have normal cytosine. Can you understand the conversion? You do. Let me take a figure of the cytosine. Where it is cytosine? Here, cytosine. Okay. What is U? You remember U? Not really. This is oxidation here. Okay, remember? Oxygen. So if you treat with bisulfite, this will become an O. Biochemistry? You don't remember biochemistry? No. Okay, no problem. Anyway, you will convert this amino group with the O. So O and O makes a uracil. Wait a minute. So you go there. If you don't have methylation, okay, so you have normal cytosine. If you have methyl cytosine, you will not convert it, okay? So if you have methyl cytosine, it remains methyl cytosine. Okay. At this point, after bisulfate conversion, you make a PCR. So you take your fragment, two primers, and amplify, okay? So if you make PCR, of course, whenever you have a U, it will be converted to T, because T is the normal base in the PCR, in the synthesis of DNA. And if you have a C, you remain C. Okay. So at the end of the procedure, means that if you have a methylated, you will conserve the same sequence. If you had unmethylated, you will change the sequence of that fragment. Okay. Can you follow? Good. So you take these two stories, and then at this point you make PCR. You make digestion with a methylation-sensitive enzyme. Okay. For example, you take this BSTU1 enzyme, and it will digest this sequence, but will not digest that one, of course. Okay. So at this point you can cut and recognize on PCR. So this is the unmethylated sample, and then we have methylated sample, you have another allele shorter going there. Okay. So you can make methylation measure in this way. This is quite easy, but the problem is that you interrogate only one or two sides in an allele. So it's very the people used that kind of assay for. Sometimes there was a kind of methylation in promoters of certain genes that can mark a specific disease or something. So the people used this kind of assay just to interrogate one locus, but it's limited. Okay. So of course you can go to let's say genome wide. Okay. Sorry, I forgot. There was another slide. I forgot it somewhere. Oh yeah, this one. Okay, one thing that I have to mention is that CpG methylation is not site specific. Okay, so the methylation is a kind of random event. Okay, so to try to explain you what it means as a random event, I show you here a map of a gene. Let's say a hypothetical gene in which you have a promoter, okay? This is the transcription start site and so on, okay? And here you have a promoter that typically has a high number of CpG sequences inside, okay? So we call CpG promoter, CG promoter, CG rich. Okay, now I mark it this mark, blue mark, all the position in which you have methylated CpG. And in yellow, all the CG regions in which you don't have a cytosine methylation. Okay. So this is, let's say, the situation in which this allele is hypermethylated. Okay. For example, a cell type in which this gene will not be expressed at all. So you will have hypermethylated all around. Okay? And so you see that if you look at two DNA that came from two different cells, for example, okay, you see that methylation is hyper in the sense that we have many, many positions that are methylated, only two that are unmethylated overall. Okay? But in the other cell, you have the same frequency, but in different positions. Okay, so it means that the methylation enzyme will hypermethylate this section, but not with a sequence-specific taste. Okay, so what happens is that you have hypermethylation all around, but in random position of the sequence. If you look at at another cell type, in which, for example, in this cell, the gene is euchromatic. So it is expressed. So you will find this gene is completely hypomethylated, so no methylation. Okay, and you see again that you have some, you have an overall very high frequency of unmethylated CpG with few positions in which you have methylation. Okay, and in another cell. Again, you have a very low frequency of methylation, but in different positions. So it's a kind of random. Okay, so it's very difficult to use a single position methylation assay, as I showed you before, because most of the time it doesn't work. Okay, so that's the reason. What is the story? If you imagine that you have a gene like this one and you want to know whether all the positions are methylated or not, it is a kind of this kind of random situation in different cells of the same type makes it very difficult to analyze, because of course if you bisulfite treat this DNA, you will have change of sequence in these positions, okay, that are random. So this allele will be modified here and here, this allele will be modified here and here, and so on. So they are different sequences, okay? You cannot sequence one, all the DNA at once, because they have different sequences. So you have to clone single alleles and measure them singularly. It's a kind of long story. So you have to make extraction of DNA, bisulfite treatment, PCR the fragment, and then clone individual fragments, and then sequence a number of clones, depending on how much money you have in your pocket. Okay, so just to show you, this is something that we made in the lab 10 years ago. This is the E-cadherin promoter. You know what is E-cadherin? it's protein contact, epithelial cells, cell-to-cell contact. So we had a line, okay, we had a line in our hands that was epithelial-like cells, so it will express icadirin. But then making a trick with an oncogene, transfecting an oncogene on these cells, it will transform and become a mesenchymal cell. So it makes an epithelial to mesenchymal transformation. Okay, so in these cells, cadherin is not expressed any longer. I mean, there is reduced. Okay, so we look at the promoter. The promoter is a typical CG-rich promoter, because if you look through, you see that many, many CG sequences, CG, 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 CG. There are many of those. There are actually 25 looking for this first position. This is transcription start site. This is 25 position of CPG. Okay. So what we did was to make extraction from the cells, then treat bisulfite, okay, and then cloning. Okay, so you have to take the cells, take this DNA, and to clone in vectors in plasmids, and then to resolve. And since we have not that much money to spend, we only sequenced 10 clones. Okay, so we took 10 individual clones of DNA, 10. As you can see, each line is a clone, and sequence them. So overall, we just sequenced 20 clones, and what the money was allowing us to do. If we were richer, we can sequence 100 clones. Okay. So looking at the results, okay, this position in white are methylated, open circles, and these black circles are unmethylated. Okay, so you see here that most of the alleles are completely unmethylated. Sometimes you have a methylation position here, but it's kind of random. Okay, so overall you calculate the frequency, you see that most of the positions are hypermethylated. Hypomethylated. That is okay with the fact that in epithelial-like cells you have expression of this gene. Okay, so the gene is active. If you look at the empty transformed cells, okay, this is the oncogene, okay, and you see that now you have many, many positions that are methylated. You see there? But they are different from clone to clone. You see that? So, I mean, if you calculate the frequency, it's definitely higher than in this case, of course, but it depends on the allele, on the cells. This cell, for example, was really hypermethylated, this one a little less. This other one is hypermethylated here. This one is, wow, enormously hypermethylated. And other are less. I mean, it depends. All the cells have different reactions. Okay? So it's random. Now, try to translate with NGS sequencing. I ask you of trying to think about. This is Sanger sequencing, okay? Cloning and sequencing, each individual allele, okay. But we know that today we can go to NGS. So we can treat our DNA with bisulfite, okay. Then we can amplify and go to NGS, okay. But the problem is that each position is not always the same. Can you follow me? So each fragment will give you a different sequence. So you cannot map on the genome. Can you understand me? If you took this sequence will have T instead of C at each open position. So if I take this sequence and I make a blast over the normal genome, it will not recognize it. Okay? So it's a kind of very difficult story, because you have not to, I mean, if you want to map this bisulfite conversion experiment, you have to make fake genomes in which you mutate all the possible position. It makes a story very long. You can understand. Just in this position, you have 25 combinatorial number of possibilities, and if you move this to the genome, to the whole genome, it makes a wow terrible amount of story. Okay, So this is the reason why making a whole genome bisulfite sequencing is extremely difficult. Okay. So I now can go to the slide that was actually reversed. Okay. So there are several approaches that you can use that are simpler than making bisulfite sequencing. Okay. And you go to the other easier problem. So what the people do normally is to make ITER, DNA immunoprecipitation, using an antibody against 5-methyl cytosine. This is the easier way to go, okay? You just extract the DNA from cells, fragment DNA, not chromatin. Pay attention. In this case, it's not chromatin, it's DNA. Okay? So you extract DNA, you immunoprecipitate with an antibody against 5-methyl cytosine, purify the DNA, put the linkers, and go to sequencing. Okay? So one alternative is that one. The second alternative people used was to make immunoprecipitation using a tagged methyl binding domain. You remember the methyl binding proteins before? They had a domain that is called MBD. Okay. So some biotech company made a fusion protein carrying this MBD with a tag. So you can bind this protein to methyl cytosine and then immunoprecipitate. Okay. So this is a kind of approach. And of course, there is the solution to make the bisulfite conversion, then go to NGS. And this is usually called WGBS, that means whole genome bisulfite sequencing. But very rare, you can find only a few articles in the literature. It's very, very difficult. Okay. So you can go to, this is just a resume, so you can make, as a principle, you can use bisulfite conversion or a methylation-specific restriction enzymes, as you have seen before, or immunoprecipitation of methylated DNA, okay, with either MBDs or antibody against methyl cytosine. And then you can go to array-based DNA methylation analysis. There are many biotech companies that sell microarrays representing all the promoters in the genome, okay. So you can have information about the methylation of promoters. Okay. Or go to deep sequencing, so NGS, with different kind of platforms that you know, Illumina or Roche or whatever. Okay, so you can go to this kind of attempt. Okay, this is the scheme of, for example, of analysis on microarrays, so you get DNA can be methylated or not. So you fragment and then use antibodies against this methyl cytosine to purify fragments that are hypermethylated. Okay. So then you use unprecipitated DNA as a comparison. You make fluorescent DNA for the methylated one, and then you go to microarrays. So you can distinguish methylated and unmethylated DNA. This is taken from a biotech company website, as you can see, Agilent. Agilent is one of the companies that sells these arrays for methylated promoters. Okay. We can just skip this one. I wanted just to show you one paper showing whole genome bisulfite sequences. The scheme is this one. You take DNA purification, you make fragmentation, then you make bisulfite conversion, you make adapter ligation, library, NGS sequencing. As I told you, it's very difficult. Okay, you have to align database to all possible variation. There are also reduced version of data I will talk you in a moment. And this is was the first paper published for that in November 2009. I always mention very, very proud because this was one of the, this Mattia Pellizzola was one of our doctorate students here. So he, after the doctorate, he went to San Diego, La Jolla, and he had this kind of marvelous paper with Ryan Lister. And this was really a kind of, you know, kind of milestones in the story of methylation, because they could make the first genome-wide methylation context. And so what they did is also because they discovered that something that was completely unexpected, completely, because we always talk about CpG methylation. So I told you several times that the C is methylated only when it's followed by a G. Now, what they found is that they analyzed the two kinds of cells. One is the EMR90 that are fetal lung fibroblasts. And this is H1 human. And these H1 are human embryonic stem cells. So the ES cells, okay, very early. And what they found is completely amazing, because while in the EMR90 fibroblasts, okay, which are already differentiated cells in some sense, even though they are from a fetal, they are already fibroblasts, so they made already differentiation, okay? And you find, and you, as you can see, you find 99.98% of CG. This green means methyl CG. So a cytosine followed by a G. That is exactly what we expect, okay? So 99.98%. Almost all of them are CG. When they look at the H1 stem cells, these are stem cells, undifferentiated stem cells, totipotent, they found only 65% of CpG, while they found also 17.3% of different story. This is methyl CHG, which is H. What is H? Do you know the symbols of DNA? They are A, G, AC, G, and T. What is H? Okay, nobody told you. It's non-G. H means non-G. So any base, non-G, okay? So it means that they found methylation in sequences that are C, for example, CAG, CCG, or CTG, but not CGG, okay? Good. And a small percentage, 7.2% of this other context, that is cytosine followed by non-G, non-G. And this is absolutely limited to the ES cells. Okay? They also try to make conversion, because you know that the ES cells can be differentiated in vitro. Okay? So you can make some growth factors or something, and they become differentiated. Okay? And when they differentiate, they lose completely this kind of methylation. They become like this one. Also, you can make the reverse experiment. So take a fetal lung fibroblast and treat with special factors, and they become again induced pluripotent stem cells. They go back, differentiation, and they acquire again this kind of non-CpG methylation. This is a kind of very strange story. Nobody actually has understood what it means, what is the reason, okay? And the distribution, so this is the story, enlarged story. And this is the distribution. So you see that sometimes you have kind of just looking at, this is OCTA4. You remember what is OCTA4? It was one of the differentiated transcription factor in the very early phases of the development. And this is a gene. And you see this is a map of methylation. So you see that you find in EMR9 that are fibroblasts, you find only, these are methylation in the strand and in the anti-strand, okay? The two, I mean, this histogram is strand and this histogram is anti-strand. And so you see that the methylation here are completely in CpG context, okay, green, CG, okay? When you look at the other two contexts, like the blue one and the yellow one, you see that it's quite distributed in a non-uniform way. H1 is the embryo cells. You see that there are modifications like this one that are distributed. This is the gene body, no promoter methylation at all. And then again, you have some of this strange methylation. But apparently, they are lost during differentiation. Nobody knows exactly what it is. So you have this kind of story that you can read through. Apparently, stem cells going to fibroblasts and going back to stem cells, they lose this kind of strange methylation. But nobody knows why. Okay? Good. So this is just a map on the chromosome, just to show you what is the distribution of this methylation on the chromosome. This is chromosome 12. This is the short arm. This is centromere. This is the long arm of the chromosome. And the blue dots that you see are all the points in which there is methylation. Again, strand and anti-strand. Okay, so you see the methylation is all everywhere. And it's especially higher in the telomeres, as you can see here. Okay, and this path that you see here is the methylation that they saw in these two kinds of cells. So in H1, in MR9. So in the fibroblast, you only see methyl CG. Okay, and this is the red path. So you see the red line, and you see that again it's higher going to the telomeres. The telomeres do not contain genes, so they have higher levels of methylation. Okay, the same story here, but as you can see, it's not evenly distributed on the chromosome. It's kind of variable levels of methylation all around. Okay, and if you look at the other methylation in embryonic stem cells, you have the blue and yellow line that are the strange methylations, as you can see. And they follow more or less the same logic, you see? Something like the same. So they also distributed everywhere. And this is the story. Very interesting. Anyway, okay. That's it. Do I have any other thing to show you? Okay, I told you that this is very difficult. They had to make a very deep sequence in something like 80 times the sequences that we normally do for making a normal sequencing, just to have a representation of all the possibilities of the story. This is not used, as I told you. The modification that is largely used is this one, that is called the RRBS. That means reduced representation of bisulfite sequencing, so reduce the complication of the story. And it's based on the fact that if you cut the DNA with a methylation-specific enzyme, so you take a DNA, as again, you purify from cells, okay, and then you cut with a methylation-specific enzyme, okay, enzyme that will cut only methyl CG regions. At this point, you will have many fragments deriving from those parts of the genomes that are hypermethylated. Okay. While if you have a segment that is not methylated, you will not cut it. Okay. So you will at the end of this kind of digestion, you will have large fragments that are unmethylated regions, and smaller fragments that are the methylated regions. Okay? You can separate them quite easily with a gel or whatever else. So you take only the low, the shortest fraction, and then you make a library, and you either go to NGS or to microarray as you like. The story is the same, of course. You can also immunoprecipitate with antibody against IMC if you want. I mean, there are all the options, but the concept is that you reduce the complication just because you take only fragments from those regions that are methylated. Okay, so that's the reason, and this is quite largely used as a let's say alternative to making a. Of course, the results are different. You have only a view of this kind of hypermethylated sequences, but it's not the same as the other work that we have. So anyway. Okay, that's it. I think that thank you. I have to run.